Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Paramahansa Yogananda, saints of all religions, beloved Swamiji, we bow before all of you. Divine Mother, be with us this evening. Fill our hearts with joy. Uplift our consciousness. Help us to attune ourselves to the true meaning of these teachings, as was the intention of Swamiji, that we learn how to live our lives in terms of the highest principles that will guide us back to you. Om, peace, amen. So, I'm going to take just a few minutes tonight, because it's the first class, and tell you a little bit about how we're going to structure it. Then I'm actually going to take some time and introduce the class and why Swamiji wrote these lessons, what his intention was. So there's a possibility that tonight might run a little later than usual. Although I was just informed by Karen this morning that I never have to write an end time when I'm listing these classes anymore. So I thought, uh-oh. For those of you who know me, that could be a serious problem. I would also just like to say that there are several people here who are actually relatively new to Ananda. So let me just very briefly say that all of the lessons, everything that we do here, every chant that we sing, everything is based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda, whose big picture is up there because we just celebrated his birthday on Sunday. He's always on the altar, of course, but not always that size. Who died in 1952. He had what we call a direct disciple, a man who lived with him for the last several years of his life, whose name was Swami Kriyananda, who's over on your right, who died in April of last year now, who then, based on teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda, founded Ananda, which has become this worldwide intentional spiritual community. Very successful worldwide intentional spiritual community in the sense that there are many colonies all over the world. They exist. There are many businesses. It's a financially independent, but most important, and it's really exactly what we're going to be studying and for the next 6 weeks, it is based entirely on spiritual principles and on the principles of what Yogananda called self-realization, which really has to do with each of us stepping onto our spiritual path and continuing to make progress by putting one proverbial foot in front of the other until we realize that we are all manifestations of divine energy. So the term self-realization really refers to realizing, not figuring it out, not processing it, but actually knowing beyond a doubt what our true self is, and that is divine. So as Yogananda said, there are as many spiritual paths as there are people, as there are souls manifesting in bodies at this time. So that's, I'm happy to answer any questions, as would many of the other people in this room at any time, but I just wanted to get us all on the same page here. Swami Kriyananda was quite ill many, many times in the last years of his life. One of the times that he was very sick, he remained extraordinarily, progressively more conscious and aware through his, I think he died at 86 or 87, I forget what year it was, but he wrote, I think, 5 books in the last year of his life, brilliant books, and he composed more music. He had already composed 450 pieces of music, but the last one of those was in the last year of his life. But his body was not as cooperative, and he was very often in the last 8 years of his life, hard for me to remember now, but he was quite ill. One of those times he was in India, and he had a bilateral pneumonia, and he was in the hospital. And many of us know this story, but it's relevant as we take off on the study right now. One of the doctors came in. Everybody, many, many people in India knew who Swamiji was, and they revered him as a saint and considered him their teacher. And the doctor said to him, "I know that you're always teaching that we should live by these high spiritual principles, but I have a son in college in Canada, and I have other children, and I have a lot of financial obligation. And there are many people in this world and in this country who don't live very honestly, and they make a lot of money not living honestly. And if I try and live honestly, it's going to cost me in a lot of ways." He was saying, particularly in India at that time. And he said to Swamiji, "Can you help me?" Swamiji said he was nearly comatose, but he said, "I'll try to." And he basically said to this man, "I have always found that by adhering," he didn't use the word rigidly, but strictly, really almost rigidly, "to dharmic principles, to right action, to the highest possible truth, that everything else comes to me." Really very much as Jesus said, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all else will be added unto you." I mean, of course, all of these extraordinary teachers are telling us the same thing. Swamiji says in the writing about these lessons and other lessons, which I'll tell you about in a minute, he said the man left being thoroughly unconvinced. But of course, Swamiji was rather sick at the time, and he really did in the last years of his life give this physical impression of a kind of dawdling old man. I mean, at this point, he was lying in bed with bilateral pneumonia. But the next day, when one of the leaders of Ananda India, Dharmadas, came in, he said to him, "Get a piece of paper and a pencil," and he started dictating to him topics for his next book. And that turned out actually not to be a book, but to be a set of 26 lessons that were going to be taught every 2 weeks, and in fact they were, many of us studied them, called Material Success Through Yogic Principles. It's very deep, it's not so easy to understand the true nature of those teachers when you study them, and it's intense. It's a year-long study course, and that's what it was meant to be. Sometime after that, Swamiji realized that those lessons, just by their very nature and the intensity of them, in those lessons, he basically outlines, under the guise of teaching people how to be materially successful, the absolute essence for how to live a perfect spiritual life, to really how to be, let every action of your life be an action that more deeply attunes you to the divine within you, and to how to live a dharmic. Dharmic means those actions that will promote goodness and right-mindedness for everyone in the world. They're exactly the opposite of anything self-centered or self-involved. And that's what's in those lessons. They're extraordinary. It is a handbook for how to live a yogic lifestyle. But it wasn't getting out there enough. It was expensive, it was cumbersome, it was many things. Brilliant, and inspired, but also difficult. So he realized that when he first started teaching back in the 60s, what he did was he put together 6-week packages of yoga. It was starting with hatha yoga, with postures, and then he would end the night teaching various yogic principles. And everybody would buy a 6-week package. And during the first year that he did it, in the 60s, he made $50,000. That was a lot of money at that time. And he goes on to say that he basically initially built all of Ananda community up in Nevada City by doing these 6-week courses. He found them to be very successful, just about as much as people could absorb and receive. It was perfect. So the inspiration came to him that he would take these material success through yogic principles and turn them into these 6-week packages. So hence the Akash came, these lessons that we're going to be studying now. Akash meaning ancient keys for achieving success and happiness. But what he said in a letter that he put out to everybody, I think it came out, I don't remember who received it, is what he found happened is that he was thinking he would do a condensation of material success, but it didn't turn out that way. He said new ideas kept coming to him. So it contains some of that, but it also contains many other ideas. Now, the interesting thing about this course is if you read it, if you just sit down and read it, and we've sent it out to everybody who either pre-registered for the class, or most of you have it, and for those of you who don't, let us know. We'll send you a PDF, and you'll have it, and you can read it before you come. They seem surprisingly simple. If we look at, for instance, tonight, I'm going to be talking about the first part of the lesson, which is honesty. And some of the keys in them are these lessons are for everybody. We're all manifestations of one God. The keys that he writes, what he calls keys, just trying to find the first one, how to know whether a contemplated act is right or wrong. It sounds very simple, and the language is very simple. And that makes perfect sense because truth is simple. But it's not always easy. And so I don't want us to be fooled. These are deceptively simple. But when you look at them, what he's done is this. He has basically taken the three philosophies of India, which are, again, not easy. Shankara, Yoga, and Veda. And the Shankya means it explains why. It starts with the why. Why is it that living in delusion, which is how most of us live, of course, living in this world that appears to be so material to us, that gives us the belief that if we attain material success that we will be happy, that those things that will make us happy live outside of ourselves. Why is it so important to get clarity about that and to basically reject that understanding of the world? And in some very profound teachings, I mean, most of which we won't touch in their purity the way they were put out initially, this Shankya talks about that. Why is it important to understand this? Now, I could say very simply, it's very important because what are we talking about? We're talking about getting conscious. We're talking about those first steps where we begin to say to ourselves, we are living in delusion. Very complicated. It sounds simple, but so much of how we're trained from the very moment of conception, when that soul identifies with a body, from that moment on, many of you have heard me and others say this, and the whole neurologic system starts happening, but from that instant, everything's out. Even creating the embryo is an outward flow of energy. So right from the moment this human being is conceived, we're starting to look outside of ourselves. We're already heading 180 degrees in the wrong direction. And everything that comes after that in life, everything is set up to try and help us see why going out is good. And it's not as gross always as buying a house or buying more clothes or buying things that maybe many people in this room have long ago rejected a lot of that. I mean, none of us are beginners in the room. I know almost all of you. It's the extraordinary subtlety of having energy come outside rather than having us remember, smriti is a Sanskrit word, that everything we need to be happy, to find true happiness, not those brief moments of happiness that most of us experience, but true joy already exists, and it's already the essence of who we are. But it's very complicated to stay on that path. And many of us who've been on this path and other paths for lifetimes continue to be fooled. our ego gets in the way. We find ourselves sidetracked by various desires. Even this desire to be free of ego can become ego involved. So it's complex. And probably most of us in this room have not completely transcended that. Then we move on to yoga, and yoga is the how. Now, this is not hatha yoga. This is the yogic philosophy. This is how do you do it. This is where we learn techniques, where we begin to see how we can begin to do practices that will help us remember. You see, it's not thinking about it. It's not learning about it. It's what are we going to do to put ourselves in a position to remember who we are and to remind ourselves constantly. Hatha yoga, chanting, prayer, meditation, all of that, study. These are all branches of yoga. And then finally, Veda, which tries to actually explain the truth. These are these ancient Vedic principles. As Swamiji says, as much as human reason will allow, because we get to that final place where what we really want to know, what we're trying to live in terms of, it's all beyond mind. But still, Vedic philosophy tries very hard to show us why these things are all true. So he's taken these three very complex philosophies, which we could talk about for years, if that's where we were going, and he's put them in these little lessons. In each lesson, if you look at it, that's what's here. It's the how do we get lost? What do we have to do to get found? And how do we do that? And then a little bit of the philosophy of why that would make sense. Just yesterday, I was seeing a patient of mine, somebody I've been working with for a couple of years, and he's in a funk. And nothing in the world's going right for him. And he's a guy who's been trying to dig himself out of a little darkness for a long time. He's actually been doing very well. I'm very impressed with him. But I said to him yesterday, and it's interesting when I sat down to read this last night, this is how simple it is. Very bright man, very aware, taken a lot of classes here and in other places, been to spiritual retreats. I said, you are behaving right this minute as if life is just hard, and his life is hard right this minute, and as soon as it gets better, you're going to do better. But what are you doing to make it better? It takes a huge amount of energy to say, I'm going to work on making things be right. Not just that they will be right, even by coming here all the time, even by being at Ananda in this temple, in these classes. Even still, we have to work very hard. We can't just absorb all this. We have to work moment by moment by moment in our lives. We have to stay clear that delusion called Maya, it's so tricky. It's very tricky, and it gets us. So that's what's in these lessons, and that's where we're going. Now, there's two other major points I want to make, and I'm going to make them very quickly because time will run short. And that is this notion of dharma, and we can't move forward in the lessons without it, that I was talking about. So the Sanskrit saying is yata dharma tata jaya. Yata dharma tata jaya. Where there is right action, there is victory. And it is pretty infallible. That's the word Swamiji uses, and it's the truth. If we're always working, living, trying to be conscious of, doing that which is right, that which is transcends ego, that which is not about us, but which is about serving other people, loving other people, living in terms of even the three principles we're going to talk about tonight, honesty, truthfulness, integrity. This is what I mean. It sounds so simple. And we're going to cover it in the next less than an hour. You know, but think about it, honesty, truthfulness, integrity. But that if we live in terms of that, then, and which is what Swamiji was saying to the man in the hospital, I've always found that when I strictly adhere to Dharma, everything I need comes to me. Maybe it's not always everything we want, and that's where we can get confused, but everything we need comes. So holding that notion of Dharma, in the light of all of these teachings is essential. And then the last thing, this which becomes later in the year an 8-week course that we offer, but I'm going to do it in 3 minutes, and that is karma. And karma means for every action, there's an equal and negative, opposite reaction. It's exactly Newton's law from a spiritual perspective. And it is virtually impossible, 100% impossible, to get away with it. There's nothing to get away with. What you put out, it comes back to you. How you behave, that's what comes to you. It might not look exactly like you think it's going to look. It might not even happen in this life. That's the tricky part, because, of course, right on the other side of karma is reincarnation. But it is always true. So every time we make a choice, a dharmic choice, to consider somebody else's experience even before we consider our own, to be generous of spirit. You know, I don't have the exact quote with me, but Sri Yukteswar, who was Yogananda's teacher, says, as long as you're breathing the free air of this universe, grateful service, you're obligated to render grateful service. Thank you. It's such a beautiful line. As long as you're even breathing the free air, well, I mean, who isn't, right? Most of us are not breathless here, so there you are. You're obligated to render grateful service. It's extraordinary when you really let it in, that as long as we're doing that which is right, that which is good, that allows our souls to expand. And even though if we've created karma in a previous life or previously in this life, we're going to have to equalize that. This is from an energetic and spiritual perspective. It can be mitigated if we, even from right now moving forward, start doing that which is right. So if we know that we're somebody who's told a lot of lies in the past, if we've cheated people in business, if we've had an affair, whatever it is that we've done, it'll come back. You know, we might be wondering in our next life, why is everybody so mean to me? Who knows what we were in the last life or 15 lifetimes ago? We can't remember such things, but it will come back. We just have to hope we're conscious enough then to even know about karma. Hopefully we all will be, that we'll keep moving forward so we'll know. Even when things are very difficult, let me see, why is this happening to me? Not the, why is this happening to me? But why is this happening? Really, why? What can I learn? But every single thing we do that takes us in an expansive, uplifted, positive direction, that's about generosity, that's about service, that's about love, that's about caring, it softens that karma and it speeds it for us. So we'll still have to go through it, but it may not be what would have come. Swamiji said he started these teachings basically because he said that Yogananda had said, and of course Yogananda's not the only one, that we are about to go through some very, very difficult times. That in Yogananda's words, what we're about to go through will make through the depression of the 30s look like nothing. And we don't know what that's going to be. I mean, the Mayans were predicting it. Many people were predicting it. I think those of us who have been on this path for a while believe something's going to happen. But they've both said that those people who were living their lives in terms of God, for God, seeing God in each other, living their lives in terms of love, in terms of the principles that we'll discuss, they will not suffer the way other people will suffer because karma can be mitigated. Now, I don't know what that means, that we won't suffer in that way. Who knows what that's going to look like, but whatever it is. And it hardly matters. I mean, that's coming whenever, whatever, we don't know. What we're doing is practicing moment by moment by moment to be in the moment and to see everything that's come to us is exactly perfect because we, in fact, ourselves have magnetized it. We've drawn it to us. Therefore, it's perfect. It's not that kind of suffering, oh, I guess I deserve this. But, wow, this is an opportunity. Everything becomes an opportunity for spiritual growth. Now, remember I said 20 minutes ago, it all sounds so simple. And I know we've all heard it. but we can't move on and appreciate these lessons until we've just looked at those three things: Indian philosophy, and then Dharma, karma, and reincarnation. Okay, so that's a speedy lesson. Now, tonight's lesson is called Honesty, Truthfulness, and Integrity. So let me just, I'm going to cover the first part of it. The way we're going to structure all of these classes is that either two or three of us will teach. There will be different teachers most of the weeks, although Tandava and or I are involved most weeks, but a lot of other people will be teaching. Then the last 30 minutes, hopefully from 8:30 till 9, but it could be 8:45 to 9:15, whenever the class is over, we're going to rearrange the chairs in a circle and we're going to have a discussion about this so that we can really try to go deeper with these teachings. Each person to be able to talk about what did you get when you read them? What questions do you have? Questions are always a perfect way. And there's a lot of people in the room who can answer these questions. We probably all could. But we'll use it as a time to come together, but to really try and experience the depth of each of these lessons. So that's how they're structured. And what Swamiji's done throughout the lessons is he keeps using this word key. He basically means pay attention to this. Here's the sentence. Here's a little story or a little explanation. Here's another sentence, pay attention. Here's a story or an explanation. And you'll see, it's all done very simply. When he talked about, let me get outside of the introduction here. In the introduction to this, and I know that, again, you either all have it or you all will, he points to two things. The one is what I said, where there is right action, there's victory, very important. The only other important thing that he says in the introduction, I mean, he says a lot of important things, but I've covered most of it, is people are more important than things. It's one of the basic principles of the teachings of Ananda. And again, something that sounds simple, but it's really profound, is that always the spiritual welfare of any person that we're dealing with comes before any of our other notions of success, of having the business go right, of having the office operate perfectly. I mean, again, within reason. Always there's practicality involved, always. But if we can make it work such that we can find what it is that's going to help any one of us grow spiritually and it will work for the community, that's what we do. And there are times where we've sacrificed things and where Swamiji himself has sacrificed a lot in terms of money, in terms of completing projects, in terms of sometimes waiting 10 or 15 years for something that he wanted to realize to come true because somebody's spiritual welfare was at stake. He's been a remarkable teacher and example for us in that way. The first thing he talks about with honesty is the difference that he wants us to see between honesty and truthfulness. And Tandava, I think, is going to talk about truthfulness. Mostly when he's talking about honesty, and this is again for the sake of the lessons, he says that honesty, the concept of honesty, always has to do with a value of something, and very often a material value. He says in one sentence early on in the lesson that it's about a monetary value, but he goes on to give us permission to think of it in bigger ways. So he says, as an example, if you go up to somebody and say, now be honest with me, were you telling me the truth? He doesn't want to use honesty in that way, and it'll matter as we go on. So honesty has to do with, again, from a business perspective, remember these came out of material success through yogic principles, to pay attention for ourselves when we get in those moments where we're tempted to be dishonest, where we're tempted to overvalue something. Could be something as simple as our time. It could be a monetary value of something we want to sell, or something that we'd like somebody else to take over for us, or we could undervalue it if we're trying to buy something, is the most simple example. But he says very clearly, and this is, again, something to live by in our exercise for the week, we're going to see this and be able to take it home, that there is never, ever, ever a moment in time where dishonesty works. Even those times where we're tempted to tell the smallest lie, because even if we think it'll save somebody, he says, you may not always tell the truth in a blunt, blatant way, certainly never if it's just going to hurt somebody, although he says always be truthful, but that there's never a moment where dishonesty is a path that works. And I, you know, for me, today as I was reading this again, I started thinking of moments where I could call up in my life moments recently, unfortunately, where I've been dishonest. You know, it doesn't look that way at the time. It looks so small. It looks so tiny. Looks like nobody's going to be hurt. But when you hold it up in the spiritual light of what happens to your energy that's trying to come up your spine, to your soul, to whatever it means to try and be an expansive being, each time you do something that's dishonest, even the smallest degree, how spiritually contractive it is, how much it pulls you in and down as opposed to up and out, and to realize the importance of the practice of living by these moment by moment by moment, honesty in every way that we can, keeping ourselves honest, looking at what are the true value of things in our life that we're trying to sell to people, whether we're actually trying to sell a thing, again, or our time, our energy, what is it that we're offering. He then expands the notion of honesty. He says honesty means being serviceful. It means to have no ulterior motives that are just to it for your ego's sake. He's making a big difference here between ego consciousness and soul consciousness. So the ulterior motive is not about gaining anything for yourself. Now, again, remember, he's not saying that we shouldn't have a good business or try and better ourselves in the world. He's not saying that at all. He's saying do it by being perfectly honest. And if we actually really want to attain the goals that we set, that we can only do it by being perfectly honest. He says honesty means welcoming, not rejecting difficulties. By living in terms of Yogananda's statement, there's no such thing as obstacles, there are only opportunities. And why would that be true? Because every time that we see something as a difficulty or we wish it would be different than what it is, we're being unaccepting. We're not embracing life, our karma, those situations that have come to us through which we could really learn. We're wishing that something would be different. Again, I had the opportunity to look back, even in this past week. At one point, I called Asha, and I was complaining about somebody. And I was saying to Asha, okay, I'm going to just collect myself. I'm going to wait till I'm not angry. This is what I was saying. I'm going to just get calm. And then I'm really going to let them know just how I feel. You know, it was 3 days ago. I mean, and then you read these lessons, but there are so many moments in our lives like that. Yeah, it was actually pretty funny. I wish I had been laughing in the moment. Then it would have been perfect. But unfortunately, it took me a few days to catch up. But it's just an example. It's an easy way to tell tales on ourselves, to say, these things are subtle. And sometimes we can even use other spiritual principles to justify stepping out of line. Here's one more interesting thing. I'm not going to go through every single one of these, because you'll have them and you can read them, and I want Tandava and Stephen to have their time. But he said, honesty means accepting failure and not mentally rejecting it. Just think about how difficult that is, to be able to look at a failure dispassionately. You know, really, just like, oh, look at that. Isn't that interesting? I just wasn't able to, or this didn't happen. I couldn't manifest whatever it is, but dispassionately. And seeing it as ourselves, not embracing it, not holding tight to it, but once again, seeing everything that comes, everything, even our failures, as opportunities. You know, I'll just finish with this one thing. We're not going to talk much about affirmations here, but they're so important on the spiritual path, living in terms of affirmations. In fact, there is a class on it, a Saturday morning class on January 18th, and they're really important. They can help us turn everything in our lives around. But when Swamiji was young, he smoked. And when he tried to quit smoking many times, and it didn't work. But he said he never once let himself say, I can't quit smoking, I can't quit smoking. He said, I always said, I haven't yet been able to, because it was an affirmation. And it is an affirmation. It's different. It's absolutely stating, of course I'll do this sometime. It's just not mine yet. I'm just not there yet. Just the other day, I was talking to a friend who was being a little hard on herself, holding herself up in a darker light than I felt she was in. I said to her, no, don't even speak in that way. You're not. You have to say, this is where I am, and I'm not wherever I'm trying to go yet. But it's a totally different way of looking at the same quality. So he's saying, honesty means accepting failure, and not mentally rejecting it, accepting it as simply a new reality, he says. Isn't that perfect? Just such a beautiful, different construct. So let me stop here, and Tandava will come. We're going to...
Hello, my name is Tandava. I know many of you. I don't know some of you. Some of you I know from here at Ananda. Some of you I recognize from East West Bookshop. Where I'm the manager, and you also see me around here playing guitar a lot and occasionally talking to groups of people. So Shanti was sort of leading us nicely on along our progression here of these three qualities, honesty, truthfulness, and integrity, which sounds very similar, but we'll see how this developing. Honesty was very particular. It's sort of truthfulness as applied to material things. Money, values of objects, things like that. Truthfulness, now we're just going to get a little more broad in terms of, you know, any true facts about anything. And then we'll move on to integrity with Stephen later, which is even broader still. But the interesting thing about truth is it's not simply facts. Another great phrase to just take away as a little nugget in your mind is truth is always beneficial. If we're really talking about truth in the highest spiritual level, truth is beneficial because it's a positive quality of God, and it couldn't but be beneficial. And so one of Swami's favorite examples is if you go and visit your very, very sick friend in the hospital and they look like a complete wreck, you don't walk in, you say, boy, you look like you're about to snuff it. Because, like, even if they do, you know, that's not going to help anything. That's not really telling the highest truth. Now, find the best thing you can say, which is that, like, hey, I've seen you look better, but whatever, it's fine. Or, like, I'm always happy to see you no matter how you look. Whatever you have to do to to say something positive, that is still true. You know, those things can still be true. So you're still not lying, but it's a much better, higher truth. In India, for a little while after, probably during and after Gandhi's lifetime, a lot of his followers had a habit of trying to emulate his adherence to always telling the truth, but they sort of took it a little too far, and they used it as an excuse to really just spout off their opinions. If they didn't like your shirt, they'd tell you that's a darn ugly shirt, and well, hey, I'm just telling the truth. But that's really sort of coming at it the wrong way. Again, it's not beneficial, and it gives people an excuse to sort of let their own opinions and egos and emotions run away with them rather than, you know, being a decent person and controlling those things, because who cares how ugly their shirt is anyway. So that's something to keep in mind, not just is what I'm saying actually the literal truth, but is it beneficial, is it positive, is it helpful? And it can be a fun exercise to do. It's not, because it's not as simple, you have to pay a little more attention. And the more attention you pay to finding the positive in anything, guess what happens? The more you start seeing the positive in anything, it's just like anything that you learn and start paying more attention to it, all of a sudden you're noticing it everywhere. And we can talk a lot about karma, and we will talk a lot about karma in all these weeks, and it can be very hard to see something, you know, rolling back at you as some cause and effect after many lifetimes. But you can see how these little things even just have short-term visible effects. Because if you're the person who's going around finding positive things to say about everybody, how are people going to react to you? It's probably going to be nice. Does anybody have a coworker or something who is always nitpicking the negative things out of whatever's going on? Right? Some nods. Are they fun to work with? No. Who do you want to be with, them or the person who goes, okay, well, we made a mistake, but like, hey, we did this part great. You know, which one is in the long run going to be the person you want to work with, going to be the person, say, you give a promotion to if you're in that sort of a position, etc. And so you can see that, you know, if you're grabbing the negative things, there's probably going to be some people who just get sick of it and send some negative things right back at you. Whereas if you're always following the positive, people are going to be happier around you. That's going to make them nicer to be with if you're making them happy. And it all just sort of works together nicely. Also, when we're being truthful, some things to just sort of watch in yourself if you start paying attention to the things that you say. If you're telling the truth, you don't have to be emotional about it. If somebody's really trying to convince you and they start getting all agitated and shouting at you, is that always necessarily the most convincing? You know, or does it, you know, how do you feel if that's coming at you? Like, why are they trying so hard? What are they trying to cover up or hide? Whereas if somebody is just telling you, here it is, you know, they let you see it for yourself, make your own judgment, they're relaxed about it, how does that impress you? You know, does one feel a little bit more truthful? Swami says, watch out for getting overly emotional in any way, really, when you're talking with people, when you're trying to be truthful. But he also specifically calls out anger as an emotion, rather than just lumping it in with all the others. And he had a great line from Yogananda, who said, the mouth is a cannon from which angry words pass like cannonballs, occasionally destroying the citadel of friendship. He loved his elaborate metaphors. but it's a reminder that, you know, these things have power and we can use that power for good or for bad, and we don't really want to be throwing out cannonballs at everybody. Shanti touched on this a little bit, I think, but there's, as Swami says, there's no such thing as a convenient lie. Even if it just seems like it's going to cover up something, make it easier. In the short term, it may look convenient, it may look like a harmless little white lie, but again, karmically, everything can come back to you eventually, and even just in the short term, you know, every little lie that you tell is, you know, they say telling the truth is easier because you don't have to remember your stories, right? So, you know, and every little thing that you do cover up, you kind of have to keep track of it, because at some point, somebody's going to uncover one of them. And as soon as that happens, okay, is it really that convenient anymore? Because somebody's realized, oh, you're not really telling the truth about that. What else aren't you telling the truth about? How far does this go? And then it automatically starts breaking down trust, even if it's just a little thing, an apparently little thing. It'll all come back to bite you in the end, one way or another. But the more truthful you are, the more people will trust you, and the more they'll believe in you and respect you as a person of truth. One way that a lie of convenience can manifest is in the case of peer pressure or just group mob mentality or any smaller variation of that. There's a famous experiment done probably in some college psychology class, I don't know where it was, but they would bring three students at a time into a classroom. And on the blackboard, there were three lines drawn. And the lines were very obviously different lengths. And they would ask people one at a time, which is the longest line? And the first two students were plants. And they would, when asked what's the longest line, point to the one that was clearly not the longest. And almost 80% of the time, the third person, who is the actual subject here, would just point to the same line that everybody else pointed to, even though we're talking about, that's not the longest line, because we're really influenced by people around us. And so that's another interesting thing to watch for ourselves. Am I telling this because it's really true, because this is really what I believe? Or am I sort of going along with what seems to be happening here, and I don't know, I'll just say what they're saying. So that's another interesting thing to watch for. And in the event that you say something that turns out to be wrong, which we all do, you know, that's not necessarily untruthfulness, because, you know, if we're trying to be truthful, well, okay, sure, we make mistakes. But it's also interesting to watch, how do I react when I'm found out to be wrong? Do I start to make excuses? Because even if an excuse is true, even if, like, you really did have misinformation, if you really try and put the excuse forward too much, there's the major part of you that's really saying, no, I wasn't wrong. You don't understand. The situation was wrong. It wasn't me. And you're already starting to color it, trying to make yourself look better. He says, you know, don't worry about it. Just say, oh, look, by golly, I was wrong. Hey, happens to everybody. What's next? And just move on with it. Another thing I wanted to relate this to was, if you come to our Sunday services here, every week we do what we call the Festival of Light at the end of Sunday service, and that's a ceremony that has a fixed script that encompasses sort of a condensation of a lot of our teachings. And the little story that it tells is of this little bird that represents our soul going through its life, going through its spiritual development. And the third stage, I get the numbers wrong, the third stage of the soul's long journey towards God is called the quest. And it comes after the revolt. And the revolt is the time when we're out there in the world going, I don't like this, I want things to be different, I'm going to try and have my way, karma isn't true because I can get away with whatever I want, and you go out and you just try and mess with divine law, consciously or unconsciously, because this is the way you want it to be, not because of anything actually true. That's the revolt. And then after a while, karma has come back to hit you often enough that you realize, okay, that's not really a good good method of going about this. And that's when you enter the quest. And it's called the quest because now you're interested in what is actually true. And that's such an important attitude on the spiritual path, and it goes beyond simply knowing what's true so you can say the truth, but it's really, you know, what is reality, which ultimately, if you take that far enough, reality is God, and you really want to find and know God. But it's this desire for truth. It's like, okay, I realize I cannot make things up on my own, because sooner or later it breaks down, because I can't get around karma just by running really fast and leaving it behind me, whatever we try to do. So what is true? And then that's such an important quality of mind for the entire spiritual path, because the farther we go, the more we realize how little we actually know. So we just have to be open to what is really out there, what can I actually perceive about divine reality at this stage. Oh, one other little thing. I'm just going to go back to the seeing the positive and everything, because that's such a good aspect of truthfulness. So much of what we do in everything we teach here, in the meditation classes, in the music, in everything, is about raising our energy and being positive. And this practice of truthfulness as a beneficial way of speech is so useful for that. I just wanted to quote one of the lines from our Ananda movie, Finding Happiness, that just came out a little while ago that many of you have seen. It's early on in the movie that the boss of the reporter, who's the main character, he's a very minor character, but he's about to send her out on the mission to go investigate Ananda. And he phrases the sort of converse of the situation. He says, if you keep digging in the dirt all the time, you start thinking the world's a dirty place, you know. And I just love that, because that's the point at which somebody of that mentality was turning around, going, we really need to look at the positive side here. So with that, I will truthfully say that I am done, and it is Stephen's turn. And Stephen should probably use this mic.
Okay. I think we're on. Great. So this, hello all. My name is Stephen, and I'm really happy to be here. You know, this is a great class. I've been involved with this class in one way or another for about 3 years now. And it's the first year, you know, Shanti was talking about how that you should not think these lessons are so simple and gloss them, you know, just glance at them or pass them off as something that may not apply to you because you know more. I've been giving this class for 3 years, and this is the first year that I've really come to understand that actual concept. It's very interesting. I was reading today the first lesson, and if you don't yet have the text, I highly recommend that you read the first lesson, or even if you do have the text. But so don't miss it. Don't miss it, because it really lays the groundwork for the whole 6 weeks. This idea of integrity is something that I think about at times and didn't quite know what to do with. You know, it's a great concept. We want to live in integrity. But I love Swami's interpretation, and I just want to read this. Just so simple, the key. Integrity means self-integration, wholeness in one's self. He said, this lesson has already alluded to integrity in other contexts. The word implies, however, much more than honesty and truthfulness. It involves every aspect of one's being. It involves the full integration of one's whole being with his higher aspirations and beliefs. This is huge. So that alone is a tremendous teaching. And what I was thinking about is this. The spiritual path is something that we aspire to. That's why we're here. I'm going to step up so I can see you better. So, you know, we aspire to so much in life, and so often we feel that we fall short because we compare ourselves with others. We know what the concepts are. We seem so far away from our ability to actually act in these ways, but there's order to the universe, and this is something that I have found elusive. It's this idea that there's order to the universe, and that if we, and Swami talks about this in the introduction, if we simply step back, he doesn't use these words, but this is my interpretation, step back and breathe a little bit and begin to tune in to the natural flow that results from this order, this is how we move toward integration. It's an opening to what already exists. There's this phrase that we often repeat here about thoughts being universally, not individually rooted. This is a quote from Yogananda. And that doesn't, it's not only true of thoughts. It's true of everything. All that we aspire to already exists. All that we want to become is attainable not only because we have the examples of great masters, which we allude to quite often, and Yogananda again said, these masters came not to show how great they are, but to show us how great we can become. So this is it's dawning on me that this not only has the trail already been walked, but the trail was walked because there was order and there were guidelines to which these great masters attuned themselves. So how does that relate to integrity? If the world itself is orderly, and indeed it is, our job may simply be to find out what it is that we can do to magnetize ourselves to it. And I want to explain that in a more articulate way. If everything we want to become already exists, we somehow have to find a way in. We have these yogic principles, we have these yogic techniques that Shanti talked about. So we have methods that get us in there. But in a greater context, there's an energy. There's an energy flow. And integrity is related to this energy flow. I want to read something else and then I'll pull it together. I realize it's not yet clear. He gives this wonderful definition. He says, integrity includes fearlessness, kindness, in consequence of fearlessness. In other words, when we feel fear, the remedy is kindness. We use kindness in place of fearlessness. And so often, we're not kind because we're feeling fear. And I know that's true of myself. I hurl things out, and it's because I'm scared of something, and I'm wanting to protect myself. So, integrity includes fearlessness, kindlessness, inner relaxation, and cheerful acceptance of whatever comes. Nice, four simple principles. He said, a person of integrity will not only be completely honest and truthful, he will be faithful to the principle of really caring for the well-being of others. He will be true above all to himself. And then he lays out further steps in that path. One of the most important of those is being true to your commitments. This is something that I've heard Swami Kriyananda talk about a lot over the years, and he goes into it in a very simple way in this lesson. This is really where he's articulated it, I think, in a way that's most approachable. This very idea I have found so powerful of doing what you say you are going to do. He goes on to say that he's startled how often people are willing to simply not do what they say they're going to do. I find myself startled by this a lot too, because I've begun to integrate this practice. And it's really interesting, because I'm realizing that's what got me thinking along these lines, because there are these laws, there are these divine laws, and we give them short shrift. Who wants to think about divine law? But somehow, if we actually align ourselves with it, a new world opens up to us. It's not just, I'm adhering to something and that's good. It's that this is the way the universe is set up, that when we actually step into that ray, the world changes around us. It's an amazing thing. So this practice of keeping your word, he uses an example. If you say you're going to go to the corner and get a newspaper, go and get a newspaper, no matter what. And you might say, well, what difference does it make whether I get the newspaper or not? The difference is, these are the steps, however silly they may seem, however trivial they may seem, however disconnected they may seem to higher truth, he said, these are the steps that enable us to step into that ray that will allow our world to change. This is what creates magnetism. There's a lot that creates magnetism. Integrity is hugely powerful in creating a positive magnetism, the type of magnetism that we are attracted to in others, that we certainly would like to offer ourselves. So this is what I'm emphasizing in my few minutes tonight. Read this particular section about keeping your word. And as best you can, begin the practice and see how it goes for you. Whatever it is, I'm going to go to get a newspaper. I'm going to wash my car. I'm going to call my friend. I'm going to stay up and do this. It doesn't matter. It's the nature of the practice. The corollary to that is when we begin and we integrate that practice into our lives, we are less inclined to make promises that we can't keep. And that's a very, very important thing in terms of our relationships to others, but our relationship to divine law. See, when we are in integrity, we are aligned with divine law. When we are aligned with divine law, we draw on God's grace. And Swami talks about this, That's what's behind something that Shanti said, the idea that when times get hard, should they, those who live according to these principles will be protected. Now, one could take that as some sectarian notion and say, oh, these people, because of what they do, they think they're going to be protected. Well, maybe so, maybe not. It doesn't matter. If there are indeed universal principles, anybody can adhere to them. So when we talk about this idea of acting and living in integrity, if we move forward in a practice like this and are less inclined to make promises that we won't keep, are less inclined to simply throw things out, well, there's something that happens. I don't know exactly how to explain it, to be honest with you, but there is something that happens because you begin to see things in a different way. It's deceptively powerful. And this is what I've taken away from this first lesson, just how deceptively powerful these practices are. And there clearly has to be something more to the picture, right? I'm not able to explain it. It's magic at a certain level, but we don't live in that way. We don't live thinking, oh, I want to immerse myself in magic. But we draw on the grace of God. When we draw on the grace of God, positive things happen. Even if things, and I'm not saying start living in integrity and everything you want will come to you. It's not that at all. Or bad things won't happen to you anymore. A lot of bad things will probably happen to you. What's going to be different is the way you're able to respond to them in a truthful manner, right? In an honest manner. It's sometimes affirmation's a funny thing because there's a fine line. It's an absolutely helpful practice, an essential practice on the spiritual path. And it's not enough simply to affirm. We want to do everything we can to support that affirmation. The affirmations themselves have power, but we need to do more to bring them to fruition. This type of a practice enables us to integrate our thoughts, our prayers, our affirmations, our activities in a way that they're aligned. We hear this idea that thoughts are things, and they are. And it can be a throwaway line. There are a lot of things that can be a throwaway line, but they really are things because in a similar manner, and I've been watching this in myself because I'm getting much better with this idea of not promising things that I won't do or cavalierly, which is actually a very strong word I've come to understand, saying something. It's more that, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought on that. I'll come back to it. When we stop making the promises, when we begin to act with integrity, we draw on this grace of God, and we find that we have a certain, a deeper understanding. This is what I'm seeing. There's a deeper understanding of life, and this idea of being able to be happy under more challenging circumstances comes into play. When the difficulties come, if we are able to let them wash through, it's a lot easier. I've regained my point. Our thoughts are very, very powerful. So myself, I've become more practiced in this idea of not making the promises. What I haven't yet tackled are my thoughts. And I'm seeing how I've just become so aware of just how outlandish they are. You know, it's one thing to think something, but then to take it to this extreme and to spend 10 minutes taking to this extreme when you could be doing something far better. I do this a lot. So I'm seeing, okay, that's a logical next step, right? Let's begin to rein in the behavior. And this is actually a sort of a true pathway on the spiritual path, and I'll end with this. we begin to rein in our behavior, that's one thing we can gain control of most readily. We can literally say, I can not do this. That I can do. I cannot do this. And I can do this. So this is good. The thoughts I'm seeing now are a lot more challenging. But what I'm realizing that I can do with the thoughts is to begin to bring them in a little bit. So instead of going on for 10 minutes, maybe I can go on for 8. And I'll actually see whether I can go on for 6, because it'll make a huge difference. There's such an energy behind them that even pulling back a little bit, you realize that, oh, you know, I don't have to do this. Just because it's really a strong habit, but I really don't have to do it. I've done it enough times to realize it never ends well. There's nothing good that really ever comes of it. And what it actually does is keep me from doing things that I'm trying to avoid. Right? It's so much easier just to work with your thoughts and let them go left and right, and then you've run out of time for that day. And you just don't have to do it. So the practice that I'm recommending to myself, and I'll just offer, is to think about this idea of integrity in terms of, yes, behaviors, yes, promises, yes, aspirations, yes, affirmations, and in addition, to see what it really means to begin to live our thought life with honesty, with truthfulness, and with integrity. In the teachings of yoga, we talk about 3 different levels: the material plane, the level of energy, and the causal, which is the most subtle of all. And we make progress one step at a time. And I think with the something about integration is that we can begin to feel the connection among those 3 levels and use the idea of truthfulness, of honesty, and integrity to begin to get a greater sense of ourselves, and in doing so to really get a sense of comfort, as Swami talks about, and a realization that by practicing kindness in our thoughts will make a big, big difference in the lives of others. Right? If we did nothing else but that, we'd make a tremendous difference in the lives of others. So I'll leave it at that. We have an exercise that we wanted to... Okay.
That was great. Thank you, Tandava, Stephen. Really, where's Stephen go? All right. Wonderful. So before, without us just continuing to talk more, does anybody have a question or a comment or anything about anything you've heard tonight that you'd like to say?
So first of all,
that's funny.
My name is Olina. I'm very grateful to be here. My first question is that you mentioned at the beginning that Vivel got some handout stuff. Where to get it? I never received any email.
So what we'll do is, if you've not received a PDF,
really?
we'll make sure it came through your email. Just check and see if it went into your junk mail or something like that. But otherwise,
or we can check if my email is correct.
Anybody who's here tonight, and if you have not received the PDF of the Akash lessons, and you want it when class is over, speak to Marilyn or Ananda Prem over in the office, and we'll just shoot you an email by tomorrow. You'll have it.
And the second thing is, somehow, maybe I'm just speaking for myself, I feel this circle makes lots of more comfortable than sitting like this. So I personally, I would suggest maybe we can just do our class this way.
We'll see how it goes. Opinion. Yeah, okay. Anybody else have any questions or comments? Any experiences that you've had that really support any of the any part of the lesson tonight?
making you walk.
Perfect.
Yeah, I was just reminded of an experience that I had the first 6.5 years working at the law firm where I am currently. I'm a secretary there and partnered. There was always a partner secretary. And the woman I worked with for 6.5 years was the most negative personality I've encountered in my life very consistently. In all those years, she came to work happy twice, and she mostly fought with people. That was what she did, and everything was very hard for her. So she was trying to tell me how to do things, and because she was a senior secretary, and then I would do them and find that they weren't so hard. And it took me a long time to realize that she was expecting to fight with people, and she always did. And she was right 100% of the time. But I didn't know that at first, and I would call people for help getting something done. It would be lovely, lovely people. You know, even the people in New York who were, you know, started out a little crusty and then thawed. And then she'd say, oh, you have to work with so-and-so. They're really bad. And later on, I'd say, oh, just really nice, very helpful. And she'd go, oh. You know, so I had I learned that she was completely creating her own reality, and I got to watch that for all of those years, and it was a marvelous lesson, and very powerful. Just sometimes it was very sad, but it was also a very good lesson in learning from, you know, somebody else's way of doing things.
It's interesting, and I'll share a story. We could probably all tell you a couple of stories that Swamiji told, but I'd like us to be telling stories about ourselves, because it just shows they happened to us. Like what Trish is saying is that there was a woman who was creating her own reality, but you were also creating your reality. You were reaching out to people and being that way. But I was in a very busy airport one time eating some pizza, and with a friend, and I didn't want the last two pieces, so I put it right on top of a garbage can there, right at the gate. And as I went to board the plane, the gate agent said to me, oh, I was so hungry, and the pizza looks so good. So I said, oh, let me get it for you, of course. So I ran back over to the garbage, and I got the pizza, and I handed it to him. And he looked at me, and he started making all these jokes about me in this crowded gate area. Oh, look, she's bringing me her garbage, and he was going on. I was just so red. I was first started to try and explain myself, you know, saying, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't really tuck it in there. It was only sitting on it. But he just wanted to make fun of me, but he was doing it very good-naturedly. And finally, I just started laughing out loud with him, and I realized it was pretty absurd that I took my food out of the garbage to bring it to him. And we get on the plane, and before the plane takes off, he comes back. He says, come here and bring your friend. I want to talk to you. And he moves us up to first class. And, you know, I've had many experiences like that. And Swamiji tells the story. We've all heard of his being in Carmel and getting dinners for free and rooms for free. And I think, really, it just speaks to what you're speaking to. You're not, I didn't think to myself, gee, I'd like to fly first class today. But just without thinking, you know, just to be generous, just wanting to give somebody something. There are just these simple things. And I really loved what Stephen was saying, and I just want to use this moment to capitalize on it, that it starts out small. They're small little practices. They're not lofty spiritual ideals. Most of us can't do that. We find it very hard to stay on the path. But picking up a phone call and speaking to somebody in New York and being nice to them, really treating them with respect. I mean, and just behaving with integrity, really, because as Tandava said, this lesson grew. It started out with honesty, then he talked about truthfulness, and before we know it, we have our arms around all of it. But it absolutely works 100% of the time. That's not why we do it. There's not the intention. The intention is to do that which is right, that which is good, is to live in terms of this little line. I mean, you started out by saying it's how these spiritual teachers, what's so important, they are living in terms of the truth. And the more we do it, the more our lives just start heading in the right direction. And in exponential ways, it builds on itself. So I love that. I mean, there you are juxtaposed to her. And I don't know if anybody else has any stories. I don't want to keep telling mine, but yeah, great.
I've worked with children for the past 15 or 20 years, and right now I have a class of 24 children, and back mid-December, all of a sudden every day I started coming home, and I said, look, honey, another box of chocolates. My sweet little parents kept giving me Christmas presents, which were a box of chocolates. So, and of course in my heart I said, oh, that was sweet, they thought of me. But gosh, are all 24 of them going to really give me a box of chocolates? Anyway, so over the break, which it was, so fortunately we have a break from school, and I knew I was going to write a thank you note to each one of these parents for the box of chocolates, and in that letter I would also tell them how much I love their child. And this kind of goes to what Tandava was saying. I mean, I was amazed. I would write one or two letters, and I'm like, wow, I'm wiped out, because I had to dig really deep to genuinely thank them. Like, okay, so, you know, I had to go... They bought another. I had to genuinely find a place in me that was grateful for them for thinking of me enough in their busy lives to go out and buy a box of chocolates. And then, digging even deeper, you know, their little boy who, you know, I don't know, practically kicks me in the legs every day. Okay, where's the place inside of me that loves that child? So it was. Again, it's kind of an easy thing, like Stephen was talking about. It's this little thing. But it was really great because I got to step back and back and back and back to, okay, where is the truth that I really do love this child? And it was fun. And if you want to know how to say thank you for chocolates 25 times, just let me know.
I have a story of how this... played out one time in a very difficult situation I had. It was a business situation where I knew a certain decision was the right decision. And I was so positive.
Close to your mouth, Ellen.
Pardon me?
Very close to your mouth.
I was so positive of it. This man came in to run our company who was a very high-powered guy in Silicon Valley, and he thought he knew the whole world. And he did in a lot of ways. But he was forcing me to reverse this decision. And I told him, no, it is not right. And he said, I don't care, I still want you to do with this. And I thought, well, what do I do here? So I went back to him one last time, and I went to his office, and I told him, and I said, you know, I said, I realize you're probably going to yell at me again, but you're making the wrong decision here. We've worked hard for this, it's to our benefit, we need to go ahead with this. And he did start screaming and yelling at me. And I said, okay, I'll reverse it. And I did. And about 2 days later, we were at a meeting in Southern California with one of his old buddies from a long time ago. And we go out to lunch, and the first thing the guy says to him is, he says, I hear you pulled out of that decision. And he says, why in the hell did you do that? Do you realize the amount of business you would have gotten for that? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, there is a God, and she's smiling on me today. But it took a lot for me to go back in to yell, because I knew I was going to be yelled at.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes you know it's right, and so you suffer the consequence for it. And it does come around really quick. You know, it's amazing how that can happen.
Sometimes it does.
Yeah, not always.
And in a way, I think when the more we practice doing what we know to be right, like what you did, it's not as hard to do it. When you know... I know, you know, people have asked so many times, how do you know it is when God's really speaking to you and it's not wishful thinking on your part or it's not something that your mind's making up? And I've always said to people, when you know something beyond a shadow of a doubt, which is not how the human mind works, the human mind is made to doubt. That's what it's meant to do. It practices that and it does it beautifully. Maybe this, maybe not. Gee, I really want that. Oh, but what if this happens? That's how our minds go. That's what Stephen's talking about when he says he can work on this for 10 minutes. The mind just keeps going. But when you know something like that, and you know it to be true, one of the points that Swamiji made early in these lessons that I didn't talk about is, how do you know when you're making the right decision? How do you really know that? And he said, really, you start to learn that when you feel good, when you feel a calmness, when you feel a sense of peace and an expansiveness, almost at a physical level, you know it's right. When you're not doing the right thing, you feel agitated, you feel a little anxious, you start paying attention to that. And as a rule, it works. There are good guidelines.
My name is Brandon. Sean, and at the very beginning you were saying that, that these ideas sound so simple, and they are. I mean, honesty, truthfulness, integrity, and yet, you know, one can spend one's lifetime honing those issues. For me, I mean, as a child, my profound awareness of honesty was the guideline of don't get caught, you know, was as much as my moral development, you know, was at the time. But as I grew, it became more and more important as I had children to really start to notice, you know, what honesty is and when I'm out of integrity or when I'll make a white lie. And it's a never-ending process, I think. And you know, one could spend a life. And it's funny also in business how people, here's a possibly cynical rule of thumb, but it seems as though those business people who say, honesty is our most important thing, it's like, it doesn't seem like there's not a lot of follow through on that sometimes. But anyway, we'll wait to see. But interesting.
I don't want to monopolize. I want to say something, but Stephen or Tandava, anybody? You okay, Tandava?
Yeah. You know, I've had some business dealings recently with this one fellow who has an attitude similar to what Brandon was talking about. And it's so interesting because we get inklings early on with people. And then I found this in myself. It was an interesting experience that his words were pretty clear. And I wanted something from the situation, so I chose to ignore them. But, you know, we broadcast our intentions quite readily. If you basically say, I'm doing this because I want to get something for myself, which is what this person said in essence, and then in response to that you say, well, there must be more to the picture here. It generally doesn't work out that way. There really isn't more to the picture because people are really quite clear. And whether, to whatever extent we're willing to tune in and then have integrity and say, you know, it's not right for me to want something from this situation. What's right for me is to walk in the other direction. So, there we are.
Here's one thing I'd like to say. We'll close in a couple minutes unless anybody else has a comment, but I want to add one thing to what Stephen's saying, something that Brandon brought up. Because you said very acutely, and we've all been there, that the closest we got to honesty at certain times was not getting, make sure we didn't get caught. If we didn't get caught, we actually thought we got away with something. And I just want to say that what we're talking about with all of these, we're talking about really profound spiritual truths and living our lives in terms of them and why. We're holding up this question, like, why would we even do it? And, of course, most of us are here, I assume, because we want to live more in tune with truth, however any of us would define that. We want to know more about love. We want to be able to feel more peaceful, to feel more contented. These behaviors, every one of these little behaviors, all of what Stephen was talking about, when he was talking about how the masters live and how important, moment by moment, no matter how insignificant the act is, that we live more in terms of that which is right, are laying down energetic blueprints in our being. Literally, they're doing that. That's what karma is, and that's what we come in with next time. So when we live our lives thinking, we'll do certain things and just not get caught, there's no such thing. I mean, we don't know that as children. Most of us don't know that unless we have somebody teaching us. It's virtually impossible to not get caught because for every action, there has to be an equal and opposite reaction. And no matter what it is, no matter how unseeming it is, so every single time, and I want to just really capture again what I started to say, Tandavi built on, but what Stephen really, I think, said very well. Every single time we do something that's positive, that's loving, that's generous, that's expansive, that is really the truth, that's not just getting away with the least amount that we can, but that in fact is looking to see, how could I give more right now? How could I help this person feel better right now? How can I show up and do whatever work it is that's needed because it'll help everybody else feel more like serving? It'll make them feel better. Oh, gee, somebody's coming to help. Whatever it is, every little thing that we do in ways that we absolutely cannot fathom puts us more in tune with that which will give us everything it is that we think we want in the world, whether it's a better job, whether it's to get into the right college, whether it's for our children to be successful, whether it's even to have more money, as long as we're thinking of using the money for the right, for the right kinds of things. You know, these principles only work when they're when what we're looking for is spiritually uplifting. But every single little, there is nothing insignificant that we do that's positive or that's right or that's taking us in that direction. There's nothing that can ever be considered insignificant. It's virtually impossible. We are creating energetic whirlpools of energy within ourselves that will totally guide not only the rest of this life, but that will guide everything that's to come. And each step, I don't know if somebody said it today or maybe it was from this weekend. Sorry, too many events and classes. But every moment that we make the decision to just put one little step in front of the other, in front of the other, in front of the other, no matter how small it seems, it's huge. And it is exponential. 1 + 1 does not equal 2 here. 1 + 1 = 10 or 100 or 1,000. Every time we move our energy, there's that whole divine force that says, come on, I'll help you. And it's remarkable how we can do that in life with these seemingly simple principles. That's what we do, moment by moment. Who wants to talk? This exercise is so perfect about it. Tandava, do you want to talk about what the exercise is that people are going to go home with? Okay. Just the last one.
The last paragraph or the whole
yeah,
week?
Let's then? Just do
three paragraphs.
Yeah. Just these, yeah. An exercise for this week. Swamiji has practices, exercises at the end of every one of these lessons. There's several of them. But this one, this last one, again, seemingly so simple, but try it. And then we'd love to hear stories next week of how it worked.
Yeah, so, and you can obviously read this for yourself when you get your own PDFs, but he's talking about basically being aware of all these things that we've been talking about in this class and just over this week, sort of like making New Year's resolutions, make a this week resolution. You know, you can do anything for a week, so try this for a week and pay attention to honesty, truthfulness, integrity. You know, notice when you have these situations like you were describing, you have to decide, you know, this course of action is clearly right, clearly wrong. Are we going the right way? Am I telling the truth? Am I telling the truth in a truly beneficial way? All of these things. Am I trying to sort of fudge the truth because it maybe doesn't make me look good? And just try to angle your behavior back in the positive direction. He also recommends printing out and, you know, sticking them on your mirror, the words honesty, truthfulness, integrity, because so much of the spiritual path really is remembering to do things. We have so many great teachings and so many of them are so simple and so easy and we just forget. And so if it helps, you know, print these out, put them on your car dashboard, put them on your mirror, put them on your front door, you know, put them on your computer monitor, whatever will help. And because there's so much we can do just by paying attention, and we let so many, we let ourselves get away with so many things simply by not paying a whole lot of attention and by pretending, it's not that big a deal. It's a little white lie. It's nothing. Nobody cares. Whatever. And we don't pay attention. But if we pay attention and we remember everything we've been talking about, we start noticing and we start wanting to change because we start going, ah, golly, I really sort of do more of that than I thought I did. And hey, look, it's not having all quite the results that I hoped it would. And so it's really about attention. You know, what are we actually doing? What are we actually saying? And how can we tweak it? How can we take the next step to doing this just a little bit better?
You can either take a copy of this or again for, we just pass them around. But again, most of you, I think, probably have it at home. So we'll turn it into good scratch paper if you don't need it. Anybody else have any last questions or comments before we call it an evening? Great. You know, now we'll make sure that you have the handout, but I think everybody does. Maybe read it if you have an opportunity before you come, and really will help a little bit with the conversation. Although this was great. So we'll see you all next week at 7:30.